My friends think I'm crazy, but I do a lot of races for workouts. I actually just did one a couple weeks ago. I did 4x2 mile and then a hard mile in the middle of a half marathon.
The Diz Runs With podcast, episode 318, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, nothing fancy to plug today. No sponsors, not even plugging any of my own goods or services or asking any favors. All I want to do is say thank you. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for interacting with me on social media or writing me an email here or there or just whatever contact that we're able to have. I appreciate it. It's fun getting to know some of you guys a little bit better. Again, whether that's on social media or in the inbox or whatever is the best method for you, and I hope that we can continue to just get to know each other. Y'all get to know a lot about me over the course of the show, and some of the stories I tell, and some of them maybe you hear a few too many times, and you're starting to get sick of them. But rest assured, I'll come up with some new stories as life goes on. But always love to know what's going on with you guys. So any chance that you have to connect with me is appreciated. So again, just wanted to say thanks today, and love you guys. So without any further ado, let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today started running after college when she described herself as being in the worst shape of her life. For what it's worth, she rode competitively in college, so even though her quote-unquote worst, she was probably still fitter than I've ever been in my entire life. Anyway, since she started her running adventure, she's dropped her marathon PR by close to 40 minutes, has started coaching as part of the McCurdy-trained coaching group, and has overcome a string of injuries along the way. I'm looking forward to a few easy miles today and a great conversation with Ms. Mary Johnson. Thanks for joining us, Mary, and welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Definitely, definitely. And guys, if you want to check out a little bit more about Mary and connect with her online and things like that, you can find her blog, and that's her website is just addresses at, sorry, not at because it's a website, y'all, but it's www.itsamarathon.com. So marathon only with a Y instead of an A there in the middle. Itsamarathon.com. And on Twitter and Instagram, you can find her with the same handle both places, just at itsamarathon. So real simple, same thing across the board. And I'll have the links to those addresses and to anything else that we talk about today, websites, blog posts, whatever that makes sense, in the show notes for today's episode, which you'll be able to find at dizruns.com/318. So Mary, the way we always start off the show is with what is a simple question, and sometimes it's a little bit tricky or complicated, and sometimes I have no idea where you know the folks are going to go with it. I feel like I have an idea where you might go with this question, but I'm still going to throw it out there and see what happens. That's just to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
As expected, probably the marathon. Though I will say that it's obviously not an easy distance to train for or to race. And I think the more I run, I won't say the less I like the marathon, but the more respect I have for it. Mm. And I would still stand true and say that the marathon is definitely my favorite distance to race. But I really also love the half, just because it doesn't totally destroy your body like the marathon does. But I will say there's just, when you've really nailed your paces in a marathon and you're able to negative split it and you're able to just perfectly execute your race plan, there's nothing better in the world than finishing a marathon and just like seeing that finish line and being like, oh my God, there it is. Cause I swear there's no matter how many marathons I've run, every single time I see the finish line, I say out loud, oh my God. Cause I think you get to that point and you've been on your feet for so long and you're just so tired and you're so ready to be done. So yeah, it's a very fascinating distance. That's for sure.
Yeah, I'll have to take your word for the idea that it's the feeling that you get when you run a complete race and you nail your plan and all that kind of stuff. Because I'm still struggling. I'm still trying to find that great race. How many marathons did it take you to nail it, or did you hit it out of the park on the first one?
Yeah, I'm kind of going backwards on that. I nailed it right away. And that's what made me love it so much, because I felt like I had figured it out really early. So I was like, oh, all these people, they think the marathon's so hard. Ha, I have it. And ever since then, like I think I did a couple marathons for fun. And then I just, once I actually started picking up speed and I actually took the time and I trained for marathons, I started negative splitting a handful, and then my past three, I have not. So I'm going the opposite direction, but I'll get back there.
Well, and as we'll get into a little bit later, that two of those three, the conditions weren't exactly favorable, for yeah. the negative split idea. But, you know, with the negative split in mind, do you struggle? And this is definitely something that I struggle with is both the mental and the physical side of it, of trying to, you know, stay under control early, try to save something for later in the race, but also kind of wrestling with the idea that, like, you know, shit, what if things start to go bad, if things start to go off the rail, like it would be nice to have a little bit, you know, have gone at a halfway decent pace when I was still feeling good, you know, early in the race. So,
right.
What for you is, or in your experience, how, you know, falling, how do you attack a race with the idea of negative splitting and then actually make that happen, if that makes sense?
I mean, it's just very heads up running. It's yes, it's following the plan, but it's also having the self-awareness to rein it in. And I know Boston this past year, so Boston 2016, I had a plan. I was ready to execute. I was confident. The training, like the data was right behind me. And I got about halfway in and I said to myself, I was like, this is not normal. Like these conditions aren't normal. The heat isn't normal. I had a moment where I was like, all right, we're going to reconfigure the race plan. And I did in my head. And then I did that. And I think I used to have to do that a lot in rowing. Like when you sit on the rowing machine for like 60, 90 minutes at a time, and you are watching stroke by stroke, you're looking at each stroke, how powerful you just pulled. And it's very mental. And I used to, a lot of times, if I was in the middle of a long erg piece, rowing piece, I would renegotiate with myself. I'd be like, all right, I think I'm in a good place to row this, or I think I'm in a good place to adjust my goal to this. And like, you have to have a lot of self-awareness while you're in the middle of, you know, whatever exertion you're doing, whether it's rowing or running or what have you, to like be okay with the goal that you've made for yourself. So I think everyone can always have a plan. And everyone, I'd hope that most people go into races being like, I want a negative split this, because that's probably the smartest way to run distance running, at least. And if you don't have that ability to, because of whatever, maybe your training was off, maybe the weather's off, whatever, to just like have the maturity to reel it in. So, I don't know. It's having the confidence of the training plan. It's having the self-awareness. It's also a lot of maturity to like being okay as to where you are today and getting over yourself, like just really having no confidence, because that's not the right word, but getting over your, where you think you should be on a certain day and running to where your body is. And yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah. And certainly a lot easier said than done. Especially with all the
sure.
data and inputs we have, you know, I mean, I don't know how many times I've caught myself and you know, people that I run with or people I've talked to on the show where it's like, you're constantly monitoring your Garmin, you know, and seeing what pace you are instead of being in the moment and how do I feel? And like, you know, even though the pace is quote unquote right on the mark, do I feel like I'm on the mark? And it's tough.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you just got to figure it out, I guess.
Well, that's a new concept that I actually just started learning, I guess, in the past year. I've been working with a coach for about a year, and I had been slamming my recovery runs, and I had just been like going out and being like, I'm just going to hammer these at 7:15, 7:30, and I was exhausted. And then I started getting injured again and again. Mm-hmm. And when I started to come under him, he was like, it doesn't matter what you run on your easy day. Like, just move, get your heart rate up, get your legs moving, get the blood flowing, get things working. And as long as you're slow on those easy days, you'll be able to run fast on the hard days. So the concept of listening to your body is something that, you know, as long as I've been an athlete, you'd think I'd have a good idea about it. And I guess I did, like, to an extent I did, but having someone say, no, you need to slow down. You need to get over yourself. You're not going to run 7:30s every day. And I did. And I remember this was about a year ago. He was like, you're done running with a Garmin for a week. He goes, throw your Garmin out. You're running just either on your own or with a Timex. And I did. And it totally, like, that week totally changed my perception of how I judge my body. And, if I'm I just went for a run, and I was really tired. I was running like 8:20s to 8:30s. And yesterday I was running around 7:40, 7:50 and like skipping. So it changes. Your body changes, sleep changes, stress changes, food changes. There's a lot of things. So it doesn't make sense that we'd be the same speed all the time. Mm. So being able to listen is super important. And a lot of people don't get that. But once I understood that, it totally changed my running and my training.
Yeah, definitely. I had the opportunity about almost a year ago now to talk to Matt Fitzgerald, and we talked a lot about the 80-20 running idea and whatnot.
Yeah.
I've bought into it for myself and for the athletes that I coach and the runners I coach with. Was that idea of taking your easy runs easy and allowing your body those recovery miles, recovery days, so that on the hard workouts you could hammer them? Was that something that I know it was an awkward thing for me to try to wrap my mind around at first, and it's still something I have a hard time explaining clearly enough to some of my runners. Some of them get it right off the bat, and some of them really struggle with the idea of, like, I just want to go. I want to go hard. I want to go hard all the time. Was that something that you struggled with, or did you embrace it pretty quickly?
I think at first I struggled with it because I was not used to seeing things in the eights for runs. Like, running over 8 to me signified a failure. And it was like being able to, I don't think I would have been able to do it on myself, but having somebody say, it's okay, this is normal, you should be here, definitely helped. And, now I'm totally over myself. Like, I don't care if I'm running 9, you know? I think it was a difficult thing to do and to understand, and having a coach helped me. And I will say also that it's this whole concept of, like, going hard all the time is not just running. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a strength coach at a local private gym, and that's the mentality of so many of our clients. And it's like, I need to go out here and I need to do doubles and I need to get back to where I was and I need to just totally slam my body into the ground and do things that I hate, like sprints on the treadmill and, like, God knows what, doing snatches and crazy things. And it's like, whoa, you don't need to do that. Like, if your body doesn't recover well, you're not even going to be able to progress right to the next level. So it's I don't know. I definitely think that the recovery concept is something that's very much overlooked and not just running, but also in fitness and health in general. And look at our society. Like, I don't need to go into, like, a whole, you know, like, societal breakdown, but, like, think of it. Like, America is all about hard all the time, work super hard, don't take breaks, like, sleeping less is considered admirable. And it's like, we all just need to slow down sometimes.
Right. No, it's totally true. Yeah. I see it a lot. Obviously in the running circles, but also in the entrepreneur small business type of circles where it's get up earlier, it's grind more, it's hustle. And, like, that's important. Like, you can't just be lazy all day, you know, whether you want to succeed in business or a relationship or running or whatever, but man, you need some time to recharge your batteries too, or you'll never make any progress.
Just the emphasis on recharging and balance. I think that's, like, the best way to be healthy in a whole, you know, all around perspective is to have balance in health and family and fitness and in your job and nutrition and recovery. So I think it's definitely a place that all runners, all people can kind of, like, take a step back and be like, okay, I could improve this, and myself too. You know what I mean? I feel like we're always striving for that sense of balance, but I think most people find that when they have it, they're probably at their most happiest. So
Yeah, and when you're happy, you're going to perform better. Again, whether it's on the road or, you know, on the trails, track, or other areas of your life as well.
Exactly. Yeah.
When you looking back at kind of when you started running, was after you got out of college and stopped competing, rowing, was running something that you had done much before that, or how did you fall into running, I guess, as opposed to doing any of the other options for exercise and working out and getting fit at that point?
I had tried running in high school, as like a, if we ran in high school, we could get out of gym, or if we did a sport, we could get out of, gym. So I was like, oh, I don't want to do gym. So I signed up for the track team and, I did a season of indoor my senior year and a season of outdoor. And, that's my first like touch into running. And of course, being the like crazy competitive person that I am, I couldn't just do it for fun. I showed up and I was like, I never said I'm going to be the best. Cause I always like, I don't know. I like to consider myself a bit of an underdog sometimes, but, I was like, I want to be with the best. That was always my objective. I was like, I want to be with those girls that are at the front. And, in high school, they put you as a sprinter. And if they know this is your deal, cause I'm not the only one that wanted to get out of gym class. So, so they put all these people who just wanted to do, a season into sprinting because it doesn't take that much to develop fast twitch muscles, but developing the longer endurance type is a bit more, more complicated. So they put me into the sprinting group and, I was horrible. Like I'm talking like everyone would be three steps ahead of me in the first, like half a second. And like, I was so bad at sprinting and constantly last. And we come up to our first meet. And this is in Syracuse. I'm from outside of Syracuse, and we're in one of the Syracuse University like indoor tracks. And I don't even think that my high school coach knew who I was. And he was like, "All right, listen, you can do this." What did he say? I think he said you could do the 400, or you can do the 1500 because in New York we don't have miles. We do 1500s. And I looked at him and I was like, "I'm doing the 1500." And he was like, "What?" Like because everyone else just wants to get out of the hard work. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "Why do you want to do the 1500? And I was like, "I don't know. I just want to do it. I think I could be good." And I lined up with I don't even think I had real running shoes at the time. I think they were like Nike Airs. They were pink Nike Airs that gave me the worst shin splints ever. And I lined up and I ran the 1500 and I got under 6. And he looks at me and he was like, "Wow, you can keep doing that." And it was like such a defining moment for me because no one before had taken the time to be like, "That was a really good job. Keep doing that." And I think I was definitely hooked at that point. I had been playing lacrosse and, upstate New York is crazy competitive lacrosse. You know, I would say that I was mediocre, but for up there, I was horrible because everyone goes on to play Ivy League and or like Syracuse or Duke or what have you. So I ended up quitting lacrosse because I was like running so much fun. Like on the lacrosse team, I'm not going to be able to have someone to look at me and tell me that I did an awesome job. And I felt like I was making these concrete improvements to my times. And I think that's why running is so addictive. You see the improvements and you're like, "Oh, I want to keep getting better." So, I ran indoor, I ran outdoor. And then I went to college and I rode crew, which was great. And I always was like that weird one on the rowing team who really liked to go for runs. because that's the thing, rowers really don't like running. It's kind of a thing. I was the anomaly. I'm pretty tall. I'm 5'9". There's a lot of me compared to a smaller, more petite person. So, got out of college and, I found myself just totally consumed in my job. And, to me, being an athlete, I felt awful. I don't know. I felt lost. I had always been part of a team and, New York is such a great city, but I felt so lost in it in terms of what I was doing and having friends. And, I guess any normal person might like join a club or I don't know, find people to hang out with. But I signed up for a marathon. To me, that was like, okay, I'm going to do something that's challenging. So I signed up for my first marathon, and I ran it, and it was fine. I didn't have very much training behind me. And then I got into this progression of, I ran one the following year too. Then I got into this, not progression, but this cycle of run the marathon, go back into the old ways and gain weight, run the marathon, go back into the old ways and gain about 20, 30 pounds. And, but for my first two marathons, I came really close to qualifying for Boston. And, when I came to my third year, so the third consecutive year, I actually didn't run a marathon. This was 2012. I got married and was like, I'm not going to run or do anything. So, I did not, but I saw a lot of the people that I had met through running, you know, run a marathon and qualify for Boston. And I remember watching them being like, wow, that's awesome for them. I wish I could do that. And I just, you know, over those 2 years of going into that pattern of training, not training, training, not training, I had met some cool people. So it definitely cured that whole like lost in New York City vibe that I was going through. But I never really was in it. I never really was like a full-time training runner person like I am now. So anyway, after that third year of watching all of them qualify and me not, I said to somebody that I'd met in New York who is and was and has always been very influential to me. And he heads up the group called Gotham City Runners in New York. And I said to him, I was like, I think I could probably qualify for Boston if I tried. Could you help me? And he said, he goes, yeah, but you know it's going to be hard work. And I was so pissed. I was like, you don't think I can do this? And that was all he needed to say, because for the next 6 months, he totally just transformed me. And I changed the way that I looked at running. And that was kind of, you know, the evolution of how I got into running. And then he did help me qualify for Boston. I qualified by a lot. I ran a 3:22. And then after that, he asked me, he was like, what do you want to do? Do you want to keep training or do you want to, he didn't say this out, you know, up front, but he alluded to like, do you want to go back to the old weight gain job, you know, party girl that you used to be? And I was like, I said, let me think about it, because I wasn't sure. I was like, I didn't know what to do. I had always done this like cycle of being fit, not fit, being fit, not fit. And then finally I was like, you know, you've just transformed my life over the course of 6 months. Like, I can't imagine going back to what I used to be. And from that point on, I was like, let's just keep training. Let's just keep running and see where it can go. So that's the long of like how I got into running. So I caught the bug in high school and it was always there, but it didn't really come to the forefront until much later.
Gotcha. Do you still do any rowing, or is that chapter, I mean, not necessarily competitively, but as workouts, things like that, or is that, you know, behind you now?
I have a rowing machine. Sometimes I'll jump on. And last summer when I was hurt, I got in the water for the first time in a while. But not really. It's rowing so hard. You need, the rowing machine isn't hard. You know, you just get on it and go, but like rowing a boat is difficult because you need the you need the people and the water and the boats and the, you know, so, I have it. No, but
gotcha.
It's always there. know what I mean?
Yeah. Part of the reason I ask is because, I dabble in it once in a while. We've got, you know, where I live, there's a little kind of fitness center type of gym type of thing. And there's a rowing machine there and it's pretty nice. And every once in a while I'll go down there and get on it for some cross training. And I feel like maybe it's one of the best cross training options out there, because you not only do you get the cardio, you get the strength training and obviously the upper back part, which I think a lot of runners tend to overlook, is the value of upper body strength and specifically for the upper back and shoulders for form and all those reasons. But I was just kind of curious if you know, from somebody who has rowed a lot and then has had, you know, had a lot of success as a runner, if I'm maybe onto something or not so much, or where your stance is as far as of rowing as a viable or maybe even one of the better options for cross training for runners.
Yeah, I think it's a great cross-training tool. I would just want to make sure people are, that you're doing it right. Because it is one of those tools that you can do incorrectly and then start hurting yourself and hurting your back. And the other thing is that a lot of times, like the way they teach rowing, especially in, you know, like CrossFit gyms, they teach it very quick and fast. And that's when you think of physiologically what's going on, that's kind of getting your heart rate a little bit too high. So it's A, doing it right, and B, making sure you're doing it slow enough that you're not jacking your heart rate up to a place that doesn't make sense for a cross training recovery rate. Cause if you're just rowing and you're at like, you know, I mean, everyone's different obviously when it hurry, but if you're jacking it up to as high as it would be as though you're doing a tempo, like that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I think there's some other options for runners in terms of cross training, and they don't even involve, machines, you know, people are just, and runners, we're very type A people, a lot of us, and we only like to think of one way, like the bike or the rowing machine or the Stairmaster. But there's so many other things you can do for cross training, like take an agility ladder and do drills for 25 minutes, 30 minutes. That's a really good recovery method. And, you don't even have to be bouncing the entire time. You can do lateral stuff. You can do hurdle drills. Like you can mix up what you do for the duration that you would consider a cross training session, and not even use a single machine, and you're still accomplishing what you need to accomplish, which is elevated heart rate, increased blood flow. So I think a lot of times people can think outside the box when it comes to cross training, but I too am guilty of being like, oh, I'm just going to go on the elliptical because it's easy.
Right. Now, the timing of this is perfect, and obviously when this goes live, it won't be anymore, but I'm actually doing a coaching webinar tonight with my clients about cross training. So this is a perfect thing to talk about and touch on more. And I honestly wasn't trying to necessarily go that route, but you know, it's just something that, you know, I feel like, and maybe I can get your coach's opinion on this as well. Just, you know, like you said, runners are type A and we want to run, and it's just something that, you know, if you're going to miss something, it seems like more often than not, and I'm guilty of this too, so I'm certainly not casting any shade anywhere else but on myself. But I mean, it's just like, all right, well, I'm gonna make sure to get my run in today, and if I don't have time for my cross training, like, oh well. And it's just, it's so important and so valuable, yet it's so overlooked and so you know, just easily casted aside. It's I don't know that I have a question other than it's just a struggle. And so finding something that you like to do, that you enjoy doing, like, I think that's the key. And like you said, thinking outside the box, like we don't have to go to the gym. We don't have to have any equipment. Like you can figure stuff out if you're just a little creative, or, you know, Google. I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. And you know, actually one of the things that, so like I'm a huge, like you need to move in different movement patterns as runners in order to be a stronger runner. And again, it's very harder to practice than it is to,
right.
I can sit here and talk about this until I'm blue in the face, but I'm guilty of not doing enough lateral movement. But you know, like for example, in the beginning of a big race, like I think of Boston because I felt it a lot this past year, but in the beginning of any big race, many people might find themselves zigzagging, right? Mm-hmm. So you're constantly moving laterally. You're constantly changing the direction of what you're going, but you just practiced for 5 or 6 months moving in a straight line.
Right.
So what do you think that moving side to side is doing for your nervous system? Your nervous system is going berserk. And it's in mile 3 of a marathon. Like that's not a good place to be, because by the time you get to mile 10, you've just been moving sideways, forward, diagonally, and your body is like, shit. Sorry, I don't know if I can.
No, you're fine. Yeah, you're fine.
But your body is like, I'm toast. And that's, I think, like, even when you put it into a real life situation like that, then I think runners start to be like, oh, I do need to move differently. Like, but it's hard to translate. And you don't know until you experience it. When you realize that you're in the beginning of a race and you've spent a lot of time zigzagging and just weaving, well, it is taking a toll on your nervous system.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And, you know, like we've both said, it's an easy thing to tell people to do. And it's a hard thing to take your own medicine sometimes, but it's worth it in the end if you can force yourself to do it.
Yeah.
So you know, we've kind of been obviously talking coaching and things of that nature. I guess maybe one more question with the coaching, and then we'll get into kind of more of maybe Mary the Runner, but this is kind of the way that the conversation has gone. You know, I coach and you coach, and it's something that I always love when I talk to other running coaches. What has coaching and working with other runners, like what does that do for you as a runner? Like how have, you know, the folks that you work with, like how does that impact you and you know, lessons learned and all that kind of good stuff from the coaching side and from the running side? I mean, a little bit of both.
It makes me really excited. Mm-hmm. Like I, you know, that's actually really funny because I just had someone do an out of this world job this past weekend. And a couple weekends ago, a similar athlete had another breakthrough. And, like I went for my run yesterday and I was pumped. I was like, this is awesome. I'm so excited. So it makes me really excited. And it makes me really happy. And the flip side, it makes me also, I wouldn't say nervous and anxious, but I realize how much responsibility is that I have in writing these people's training plans, because I spend a lot of time running in my week, and a lot of the people that I coach are at a very similar level, and they take it very seriously too. So to me, I want to make sure I'm doing a really good job, and I think that's why I'm involved in a group where my head coach is actually not only my coach, but also my mentor and boss, so to speak. And it helps to have him to bounce ideas off and bounce questions off. And I'm like, even if they're simple, like, oh, can I give this person a double the day after a workout? Like, I think I know the answer, but it's so helpful to have somebody there to be like, yes, and here's why, or no, and here's why. So it's a double-edged sword, you know, in one hand, it's like, I love it. And like some mornings, some like race mornings, I'm like sitting at my computer and I'm like, oh my God, I need results. I need updates. I can't find the tracking. And then in the other hand, it's like, I know how much responsibility I have. I know how much, this is people's lives. Like these are their bodies. Like if they get hurt, I'm a little bit responsible, and especially having a history of injuries myself, like I consider it a huge responsibility to have these people's health in my hands. So, it's good and bad, but bad for good and challenging reasons.
Yeah. And it's definitely something that I've maybe because I don't feel like I've accomplished anything, any of my big goals yet in running, but man, I've never been more excited than, like you said, like hitting refresh on the computer, on the phone, like to see the updates result and like, how did somebody do as opposed to my own running? Like I could care less about my own running at this point. Like how do my folks do?
Well, and like waking up to text messages, like that's the best part when, and like in the dead of summer, when I'm not training for anything, waking up to like 10 text messages, like I just killed that run. And I'm like, yes, I've been sleeping.
right.
But yeah, it's awesome. It's really great.
Definitely. Injuries. I can't let that pass. And it's even something I wanted to talk about a little bit anyway, but my background and my education is all in athletic training and sports medicine. So, I could nerd out on talking injuries, running and otherwise just about all day, every day, but I'll try to keep it at least somewhat confined. But, you know, you talked about on your website, and you mentioned it here, that you've had some history with injuries. What kind of injuries have you dealt with?
I think my most serious ones have been the bone injuries. So I had a stress reaction in my tibia, and then a stress reaction in my femur. Before the tibia, I was diagnosed with a torn labrum, and bursitis. And I think, that was rough, but I think what was causing me the most pain was the bursitis. And I ended up getting a cortisone shot for that. And, it really helped. And so the labrum's still torn in the hip, but it doesn't cause me pain. It's just some clicking now and then. So, so that's, you know, that was kind of a lucky pass. And then after the femur, things have been, you know, relatively healthy, knock on wood. But you know, there's the occasional, like piriformis and I like every now and then my SI joint kind of acts up, but I think those are just normal running nags,
right?
Like things that come up. So yeah, the most serious ones are the tibia and the femur.
Yeah, it's you know, those quote unquote normal things, you know, you can stay on, as long as you stay on top of them and you can address them, like, you know, whatever. But yeah, you start getting some bone issues. Stress fracture in the femur, that's you know, from my experience, anything with the femur, like, that's usually pretty serious. Like did that take a while to come back from?
Yeah, and I, you know, that one was tough. I had just come back from the tibia one, and I think it was a mistake training for a marathon coming off of an injury already. And the tibia one, I had let go. Like, I never had a bone injury, so I let that go for like 6 months. And I was like, took time off, didn't take time off, took time off, but not enough to heal, and then came back. And it was 6 months of just like too much. And finally I let it heal, got over it, ran a marathon, but amped it up a little bit too much for that. And of course the marathon I ran was Boston, which is downhill, which greatly affects your quads and femur. You know, looking back on it, I shouldn't have run Boston, but I didn't know, like, I didn't know that what that feeling was. I had a little ache in my quad, going into it. And I didn't know that I, you know, this sounds really stupid, but I didn't know I could actually break that bone. I'm sore from Boston, everyone's sore from Boston, my quads really hurt, but I really hurt. And then probably like a week went by and I still had this one direct pain in my quad. And, people still were like, you don't break your femur. Like, you're fine. You just have a quad strain. And I was like, I don't know. I just, in the pit of my stomach, I knew something was wrong. And finally, I got an MRI and I got the diagnosis that there was a stress reaction and I couldn't do anything. And I guess nowadays it's stress reactions and stress fractures of the femur are kind of hand in hand. They don't, it's kind of a blanket, like, you've just almost broken your femur, so stop doing what you're doing. coming back from that was tough. I think I took off 10 weeks, and then 9 weeks, nine or 10, and then came back super slow with like 1-2 mile runs. And then still, like, coming back from that in terms of like how I felt in the muscle area was very hard. Like, if I went and did a really hard workout the next day, I would be super achy in that spot. And it wasn't a I'm broken again ache, but it was like the muscles around the area were just so tight and jacked up. So even now, you know, I'm over a year out, and even now when I do really hard runs and really hard races, that spot on my quad gets fatigued really early. And I have to like mentally shut it off and be like, you're fine, it's healed, it's over. And it's not even like I don't mentally panic, but it's like it gets fatigued very quickly. Mm-hmm. And the day after, when I'm sore in that spot. So, you know, like, I'm a year and a half out and I'm still kind of like, I won't say dealing with it, but it's still like, it doesn't go away.
Right. Yeah. It's still giving you the reminder. And, you know, like you said, it's not something that you'd think of right off the bat. Like, you know, if it's shin pain, like, yeah, you might think stress fracture. And somewhere in your foot, like, yeah, you might think stress fracture, but in your quad, like, that's certainly not one of the, you know, even as somebody like me, even somebody with the medical training and background, like, that would not be top three, four, five, six, even, you know, thoughts of you know, you'd be ruling out a lot of things before you got to, well, shit, maybe it is a stress fracture. Like, that's it's crazy.
It was really weird. And it, like, I couldn't stretch it, I couldn't feel it, I couldn't, it wasn't even like the tibia, like, I couldn't touch it. And it was like, if I did things like put on a sock or put on a shoe, I felt it up in my quad. And like, really bizarre things. Like, I remember going to the bathroom in the middle of the night and then like climbing over blankets to get back into bed, and like that pushing off a blanket bugged it. And like, just really crazy, unique things. And the whole, what do they call it? Like a hinge test where you have your leg dangling off and, you push down on one end of your leg. And if it hurts, it's probably a stress fracture. And that bugged it a lot. But even still, like, people were like, yeah, but that could be anything. I was like,
no, yeah. It's,
okay.
it's definitely not, not something common. I mean, it's definitely not. So, you know, too often, I think in a lot of things, and, you know, this can be a, you know, a kind of a segue here, but I think in a lot of things we overanalyze stuff. And so it's, you know, when you don't, and then it ends up being that thing that if you would have overanalyzed, like maybe that you would have found it earlier, like that can just be frustrating, but it's like, what are you going to do?
Yeah. And I actually, I was talking to Esther Atkins. She's one of the coaches in my group. And she was like, you know, when it's above the knee, it sometimes signifies a nutritional deficit. And that actually really struck a chord with me because not like I was trying to lose weight going up to Boston, but I did have my chiropractor leading up to that marathon took me aside one day and was like, are you okay? Are you eating enough? And I was like, yeah, what do you mean? And what was going on is that I had a super big mileage increase very quickly and I wasn't compensating nutritionally. And it, you know, it was a mistake. I didn't mean to not eat enough. And that I definitely think it was a lot of different factors, but that was a huge one, is that my mileage got jacked up and I was eating like tuna fish salads for lunch. That's not enough. And I think I lost a lot of weight very quickly and it kind of affected my bones. So that, I think that's a big issue as well.
Yeah. And I mean, it's good that you bring that up because it's one of those, you know, like you said, a whole lot of factors and none of them that you can think about in the moment, but looking back and you start putting the pieces together and you're like, well, man, this and this and this and this,
yeah.
And like they all create that perfect storm where if you would have just, you know, been quote unquote right in all of them, but one, you wouldn't have had the issue more than likely, but you know, it's just all, you know, the way it all comes together.
Hindsight's 2020.
Definitely.
Always.
So, kind of speaking of hindsight 2020, there you go. That was a perfect little segue here. Earlier this year, a couple of races in not a whole lot of time. You ran in the spring of 2016. You ran Boston, and then what was it? 5-6 weeks later, you turned around and ran Buffalo. And according to some of the write ups on your website, and I was one of the two or three people that read the most recent Buffalo post all the way from the top to the bottom.
It was a long one.
Neither race necessarily went quite according to plan, although I would argue that Boston was a success with a PR on a less than great day. But you know, I feel like we could probably talk for a whole hour on just these two races, and we need to wrap this thing up at some point. But looking at those two races, which were both hot races, kind of what have you learned from we'll start here and we'll see where it goes, but how would you describe your two races from this spring kind of in general, and then you know, depending on how much time we have, we'll kind of dive into them a little bit, but we're not going to get all the way as deep as I would like to, but yeah, it is what it is.
How would I describe them? Oh,
or just the experience in general. I mean, you know, like what did you learn? Kind of what's the overview of you know, where you are now, whatever it is, 6-7 months later or 4-5 months later, looking back on, you know, the two races, it's the first time from what I read, the first time you ran two races in the same year, let alone like, in such a short turnaround, like, you know, very, very wide open, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Well, marathons are hard. that's what it showed me. I remember finishing Boston, not finishing. I was probably around 21 or 22. And it was the first time in a marathon that I said to myself, this is so humbling. And,
what was it that was humbling for you?
It was just like, everyone was having a hard time in Boston. And like, I had done Boston, 2 years prior and it was warm. It was warmer for sure. But in terms of like the energy as a runner, this year was like, it was like a battleground. Like people were out there sharing water, sharing gels, sharing ice. Like I know that's Boston and that does happen a lot of times, but this year it was like, by the time if you survived and you were still running at mile 22, it was like, we were all in this together. Mm-hmm. Everyone was like, holy crap, this is really, really hard. And, I think I really underestimated how taxing it was to get, like I have, the way I ran Boston this year, I have zero regrets. I ran the entire thing with gusto. I tried my hardest. I did have to reevaluate the race plan in the middle of it, but I never felt like I gave up. And I think, that's hard to be so dialed in for 3 hours and then get out of it and not take a second to step back and like relish in your accomplishments. and then say, I'm going to do it again. Like, that's, I think I totally underestimated how difficult it was, because when I got into Buffalo and I got to the part where it was really hard and gritty, I was like, no, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And like, I even went into Buffalo and I was like, I can DNF if I want. Like, there's, you should never go into a race thinking you're going to DNF unless you're going to DNF because, mm-hmm. and you're going to be okay with that. And I really was like, for Buffalo, I put myself in a damned if I do, damned if I don't situation. And I, like, to me, not running Buffalo would, because I'm so competitive in myself, not running Buffalo would mean that I didn't try my hardest, but then mm-hmm. running it, I wasn't really prepared mentally. And I, should I not have run it? Probably not.
Right.
But like, would I have always wondered what could have happened? Yeah. And, I mean, Buffalo was just hot and just so, so humid.
Right.
But like, my husband saw me around mile 3 and he said that everyone was already drenched. And I know for sure Buffalo, I felt great until I didn't. And that mm-hmm. is definitely the humidity. Boston, I think, was a little bit different, in terms of, I don't know. I guess it was less humid, and so you can kind of hang on a little right. bit longer. But as soon as my stomach turned in Buffalo, as soon as I kind of ran out of fuel, things just totally turned. And mentally, I didn't have the gear to be like, mm-hmm. "Suck it up, Mary. We're still right. doing this." So.
Yeah, I had a similar, not quite as dramatic, but a similar situation in my most recent race, which was mid August. I was out in California, up in the Sierra Nevada. So, you know, the typical temperatures for the race was, you know, supposed to be like, you know, race time start like in the low to mid 40s and high for the day, you know, 80 to 81, 82, something like that. And the start time temp, it was like high 50s, low 60s, and I would argue that on the asphalt finishing the race in the sun, like it was every bit of 100 degrees coming in.
Oh.
And it's just like, you know, once your body gets to that point where, you know, whether it's fuel, whether it's, for me, it was salt. Once something gets off in the middle of the race, like there's not a whole lot you can do.
No.
Like you can give in mentally or you can try to suck it up, but in any event, it's not going to be fun.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah. Well, and marathons are hard anyway.
Right,
so
right.
I keep saying this over and over, but like if you need to have a good plan anyway. And then like, if you don't have enough time to like, you don't have time. If something, mm-hmm. if your body hits that red zone and there's not really any turning back unless you stop.
Yeah, no, it's tough for sure. I don't know. I feel like maybe this is going to be a stupid question because I feel like maybe you've already answered it. But you know, doing that turnaround, that you know, 5 weeks or whether it's 5 weeks, whether it's, you know, 2 months or whatever. But to try to race two marathons pretty hard in a short you know, short window like that. What did you learn about, you know, how if you ever decided to do this again in the future, which I don't know if from reading it, I don't know if that's going to be in the cards, but who knows. You know, what would you do differently or would it just be not to sign up for two back to back like that again?
I mean, I wouldn't sign up for two back to back ever again, unless I went into one and I was like, yeah, this is a training mm-hmm. run. And I ran it as a training run.
Do you think you could do that?
Yeah, I actually, I do. My friends think I'm crazy, but I do a lot of races for workouts. Mm. I actually just did one a couple weeks ago. I did 4x2 mile and then a hard mile in the middle of a half marathon.
That's
down
awesome.
The road from me. And it's awesome because it's like a supported run.
Exactly.
You're around
yeah.
people and like, who doesn't want to be cheered on for their workout? You know, like, so yeah, I do think I could probably do a marathon for fun. And then go back and do it as a race. Mm-hmm. But I also don't think a lot of people could. And I know like a lot of my clients, I've just started doing that with them. I'm like, yeah, go into this run as a workout and you're going to need to slow down and speed up and people are going to be looking at you and wondering what the heck you're doing, but whatever, like who gives a crap? And, it's a cool, it's fun to do that. So yeah, I wouldn't sign up for two to race, certainly mm-hmm. not. But if I could use one as a training run and then race maybe a few weeks later, yeah, I don't see what's wrong with that. It's this expensive supportive run.
Right. From someone who's on record is saying that the mental part of my training is the part that needs the most work, or the mental part of my game going into a race, if you will. It almost sounds like that would be a great mental workout too, to stick with the plan and not get caught up in the race hoopla and not worry about racing, but just to stick with, this is the workout. I'm going to start off easy. I'm going to do whatever, whether it's repeats, whether it's tempo, whatever it might be. Like,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it feels like it'd be as much mental as physical almost.
Well, and that's a really good, like, you wake up right when you would normally for race time. You have your stuff laid out. You have your nutrition laid out. You like everything. It's a good dress rehearsal. Mm. You're just not going balls to the wall, and that's fine. It's just a good, it's good practice for anyone, you know, whether you're doing a half or a 10K or, you know, putting yourself in the race situation and not racing it is great practice for, for everything.
Right.
They have a series of races in Connecticut where I live, called the Boston Buildup, and they start at 10K and they go 10, 15, 20, 25. And they do have a 30K now too. Mm. And it's the same idea. Like, some people show up and just run easy. Some people show up and run super hard. Some people show up and do workouts in it. And it's just getting used to practicing, and all of the courses are ridiculously hilly.
Right.
But it's getting used to that practicing of like getting up and going to a race.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. It's something that, I've never really done. I've never really done the training, you know, the race halfway through the training cycle, but, maybe it's 'cause I'm cheap and I don't want to pay for that more expensive, training run, but I think the benefits are there. You know, like you said, it's supported. There's mm-hmm. crowds. There's, you know, you don't have to worry about bringing water and stashing an orange somewhere on the course where you're going to run. Like, you take mm-hmm. advantage of the race and, you know, get a little medal for your training run, which is not a bad thing either.
And you'll probably end up running faster than you would alone for your workout.
Yes. Yeah, definitely. Which can be good or can be bad depending on sure. what the workout is going to be. But, anyway, like I said, I feel like I barely scratched the surface on the Boston Buffalo thing. I really wanted to touch on that, but you know, I let the things go as they may. But before we wrap up, one last question, not necessarily specific to Boston and Buffalo and earlier this year, but just kind of in general, I like to end with what I've been calling a philosophical question. So it's wide open, no right answer. Could be a long answer. Could be short and sweet. It's completely up to you. But at this point in your life and in your running career, what has running taught you about yourself?
Oh man.
Or should I have started with that and then we could have used that for the entire hour?
Oh gosh. It's taught me that I am my own worst enemy. Mm. My heart's beating really fast right now. It's a perfect example. I'm like, I don't know how to answer this. I'm my own worst enemy. I am competitive with other people, but when it comes to myself, like, I'm so tough on myself. Mm. And, it's also taught me that the easy answer, and I will say there is an easy answer because it's taught me that I need it. Mm. When running isn't in my life, I'm not very happy.
Right.
And I've actually in the past year and a half, have gone through a career change. I used to work in fashion marketing in New York City, and it got to the point, I won't say like I quit my job because of running, because that certainly isn't the case.
Right.
But it got to the point where that lifestyle wasn't for me, and I'm not going to the Olympics. I'm not a professional runner, mm. but I'm a grown up enough at this point in my life to say that running makes me really happy. And when I'm running and when I'm training and when I have a goal and I'm trying to achieve it, that's the happiest that I am. And I had this revelation about a year and a half ago, and I ended up getting laid off from my job. But it was very good timing because I was already thinking about getting out and pursuing something else, whether it's, you know, what I'm in now, which is strength and conditioning mm-hmm. and coaching, or physical therapy. I had both thoughts that came mm-hmm. to my head. And I think it was just the overarching idea that like, I need to have this kind of goal or this regimen in my life. And it's when I'm the happiest, and, things when I'm injured, it's like, it was tough
right.
because I didn't like, especially the first injury, I had a very, very hard time with that first injury because I didn't know what the heck I was doing. For the second one, I kind of was like, all right, I'm prepared for this. I'm going to cross train, I'm going to go to yoga, and I'm going to stay healthy, and I'm going to stay happy. But for the first one, I'd never done that before. I'd never been in this, like, you can't train now. So now what? And I was really unhappy. And now that everything's, my whole life has completely changed. I work, I live in Connecticut. I work at a gym 2 miles from my house. I do, you know, I'm part of McCurdy Train, this awesome coaching group. And my life is just so much better because I have time to balance running. And I make it a priority because I know that if I don't, I'm not going to be very happy. And that's just a part of who I am. So it's taught me balance, and it's taught me that I need it because otherwise I'd go crazy.
Yeah, no, that's why I love these questions, because there's no right answer, but the 99 times out of 100, there's the perfect answer. And I think a lot of us can relate that we need it, that it just helps with the balance. And we talked about the balance earlier too. So I don't need to, I don't need to dissect this. We brought it back full circle, and I think that was a great answer. So, guys, again, itsamarathon.com to read about, you know, what she's got going on. And I'll definitely make sure to link to the Buffalo Post. If you want to sit down and laugh a little bit and go, oh yeah, I feel like maybe I've been there a little bit too.
If you want to read about taking a crap in an alley,
There's your teaser. That's when you know that things didn't go well, is when you look for an alleyway to peel off and solve a little GI issue. But
hey, it was only 25 seconds. That's
pretty fast.
Awesome.
It was pretty good. Pretty good.
Thank you.
Impressive, to say the least. But,
thank you. I've worked on it.
Definitely. Again, itsamarathon.com. Connect with her on social media at same thing. It's a marathon. Links in the show notes, disruns.com/318. So Mary, thanks for taking the time today. Glad we were able to connect, and who knows what the future holds. If you're up for it, I'd love to do this again at some point down the road, and just to catch up and see what's new, and go wherever the wind blows us. So, like, kind of like we did today. So thanks for the time, and all the best going forward.
Thank you so much. It was so nice talking to you.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Mary and myself. And I mean, you know what I'm going to say here, right? As always, I would love to hear what stood out to you from this episode. What was your key takeaway? What was something that we talked about that sparked something in your mind? There were quite a few things for me, and Mary almost made light of it towards the end of the episode, but she kept going back to the idea that marathons are hard. And I guess I almost say idea with air quotes around it, because I mean, that's a fact. Like, running a marathon is hard. And maybe it stands out to me because of my crash and burn a couple of months ago at Running with the Bears. Maybe it's different. Maybe it's from talking to somebody like Mary or so many other folks I've had on the show who are significantly faster than me in the marathon. And to hear her talk about how hard it is and you know, on days that she doesn't have a good race, still light years ahead of me. It's just a reminder that, no matter what level you're at as a runner, if you're running 26.2 miles or 42, what is it? My metric friends, 42.2 kilometers, I believe. That's difficult. And that's to be, you're to be commended if you do that, you know, whether you hit your goals or not, whether you walk or not, whether you qualify for Boston or not, just doing it. That's impressive, because marathons are hard. And, running two marathons in 5 or 6 weeks is really hard, or racing two in 5 or 6 weeks is really hard, as Mary found out kind of the hard way this year. So I don't have anything more fancy to say than that. Marathons are hard. And, when you see people on social media talking about, new PRs or how great they've done, I mean, that's to be applauded and congratulations. But just remember that not everybody, in fact, most people aren't gonna PR every race, aren't gonna always run a sub-3 marathon, aren't gonna always be in the 3:15 range or whatever. Whatever your goal is, keep working towards it. But realize it's gonna be hard and it's gonna take some work. And that's okay. That's okay. That hard work makes the reward that much sweeter. So now I'm kind of rambling, but I think that's what really stood out to me, is that marathons are hard. And it's okay to not always have them go according to plan. In fact, they're not always going to. So anyway, let's wrap this thing up. Thank you guys for listening again. And like I said earlier, just thanks for connecting and getting in touch with me and giving me the feedback and just, I mean, I just appreciate you guys. So that's it for today. Can't wait to talk to you again, but until then, take care of yourselves and thanks for listening. Enjoy your next run and we'll talk soon. Take care, guys.